The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Kathy Bostrom from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Oprah Daily. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Daily. Cholesterol isn't just about age or diet. Hormones matter too. For women, cholesterol levels spike at key hormonal moments from puberty to menopause. Here's how to manage these peaks, by Lisa Arbiter. We tend to think of cholesterol as something that rises slowly with age, ticking up a few points at each annual physical until all of a sudden you're eating oatmeal and walnuts every day. But for women, cholesterol doesn't rise in a straight line. It shifts at specific moments across the lifespan, often driven by hormones rather than habits. Cholesterol rises and falls along key hormonal transitions, says Rachel Bond, MD, System Director of the Women's Heart Health Program at Dignity Health in Arizona. Estrogen, she explains, plays a major role in how cholesterol is produced, processed, and cleared from the body. When estrogen shifts, most notably during puberty, pregnancy, perimenopause, and postmenopause, cholesterol often shifts with it. Understanding this timing matters. Heart disease remains the leading cause of death for women, yet only about half of us are aware of that fact. And because cholesterol is one of the most modifiable cardiovascular risk factors, these hormonal shifts aren't just warning signs, they're opportunities. When women understand their risk early, Dr. Bond says, they can profoundly shape their long-term heart health. Puberty and early adulthood, your baseline is set. During puberty, as estrogen begins to rise, it becomes a powerful protector of heart health. Estrogen helps the liver clear LDL, the bad cholesterol, from the bloodstream, and supports higher levels of HDL, the good cholesterol. Boys don't get the same protection. Testosterone tends to lower HDL levels, which helps explain why men often begin showing signs of heart disease years earlier than women do. For most women, estrogen serves as a shield, at least until the menopause transition. But that shield isn't foolproof. About 1 in 250 people has familial hypercholesterolemia, FH, a genetic condition that interferes with the liver's ability to clear LDL cholesterol. Even in childhood, those with FH can have dangerously high cholesterol levels. And the condition often goes undetected until a routine screening or a cardiac event brings it to light. Another important exception is polycystic ovary syndrome, PCOS. PCOS is often framed as a reproductive issue, Dr. Bond says, but it also affects cardiovascular health. Hormonal imbalances associated with PCOS can drive cholesterol higher as early as a woman's 20s, which is why regular cholesterol screening is recommended. If you have PCOS, talk to your doctor about whether you need earlier or more aggressive monitoring, and in some cases, medication. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends cholesterol screening for all children between ages 9 and 11, with a follow-up between 17 and 21. Identifying risks like FH early and understanding your family history means prevention can begin long before lasting damage occurs. Pregnancy, a deliberate temporary spike. During pregnancy, cholesterol doesn't just rise, it surges. LDL, HDL, and triglycerides can jump 25 to 50%. Outside of pregnancy, those numbers would raise alarms, but during pregnancy, they're expected and necessary. The increase supports fetal brain development and hormone production, Dr. Bond explains. Because these changes are expected and temporary, cholesterol typically isn't monitored during pregnancy. The more meaningful moment comes several weeks or months after delivery, once hormone levels normalize. That's when your doctor may recheck your lipid panel to see where your cholesterol has settled. If levels remain elevated, or if you had complications such as gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, or gestational hypertension, you'll need closer monitoring with regular screenings, lifestyle modifications, and possibly medication. Women with a history of preeclampsia, for example, face roughly 4 times the risk of developing high blood pressure and double the risk of cardiovascular disease later in life. These conditions are windows into future heart health, Dr. Bond says. Signals to monitor risk sooner, not later. If you experienced any of these during pregnancy, make sure they're part of your medical history going forward. Perimenopause. Your busy years collide with biology. Perimenopause is often when women first notice their cholesterol starting to rise and either blame themselves or brush it off. This stage typically begins 4 to 10 years before menopause, when estrogen becomes less consistent and the body stops clearing LDL as efficiently. There's a clear inflection point around the final menstrual period, says Samar El-Khoudary, Ph.D., MPH, chair of the Department of Epidemiology at Virginia Commonwealth University's School of Public Health, and an investigator with the study of women's health across the nation. LDL and total cholesterol rise rapidly during this window, often over just a few years, and not because women suddenly eat or move differently. HDL adds another twist. Its level often rises during menopause, but its protective power can weaken. As El-Khoudary explains, the particles themselves become less functional. So you can have a high HDL number that looks great on paper, but doesn't protect the arteries the way it once did. Given these biological changes, what can women actually control? In a study in Menopause, published in August 2025, El-Khoudary, its senior author and investigator, analyzed nearly 3,000 midlife women and observed four health measures most closely tied to future cardiovascular problems: blood sugar, blood pressure, sleep quality, and nicotine exposure. Yet as life gets heavier, career peaking, caregiving ramping up, addressing these items only becomes harder. Only 21% of midlife women meet optimal levels for all of the American Heart Association's Life's Essential 8, a set of cardiovascular health metrics that include diet, exercise, weight, and more. That means most women are leaving meaningful protection on the table, even when they're doing many things right. Together, these biological shifts and life pressures make perimenopause a critical, yet often missed, window for prevention. If cholesterol starts climbing in your 40s, ask whether perimenopause may be part of the picture and whether it's time to talk about next steps, such as medication. More on that below. After menopause, a new normal. Once menopause is behind you, cholesterol tends to settle at a new and higher baseline. This is often when the conversation about medication begins. The decision to start a statin or other cholesterol-lowering drug isn't one-size-fits-all. Dr. Bond considers persistently elevated LDL, greater than 160 mg per DL despite lifestyle changes, strong family history, and calculated risk of heart attack or stroke over the next decade. If medication is recommended, it isn't a sign of failure. It's a tool. There's a misconception that cholesterol-lowering medications are inherently dangerous, Dr. Bond says. Statins, when prescribed appropriately, are safe and effective. They're also underused in women, contributing to higher rates of preventable strokes and heart attacks. For women in borderline risk categories, Dr. Bond may recommend additional testing, such as a blood test for lipoprotein A, a genetic risk marker that doesn't respond to lifestyle changes, or a coronary calcium scan to check for plaque buildup. These tests can help clarify risk when cholesterol numbers alone don't tell the full story. The big question, can hormone therapy help? It's an easy leap to make. If estrogen helps the body clear LDL, bad cholesterol, shouldn't replacing it during perimenopause protect the heart? But the science isn't that simple, and neither the experts we interviewed for this story or major medical organizations recommend thinking about hormone therapy as a heart protection plan. Here's what's backed by evidence. HT is primarily used to treat menopause symptoms like hot flashes and night sweats. For some women, relieving severe symptoms can indirectly support heart health by improving sleep and reducing stress. But that's different from using HT to prevent heart attacks or strokes. And timing really matters. When HT is started before age 60, or within about 10 years of the final menstrual period, in women who are at low cardiovascular risk, it may be neutral from a heart standpoint and can show moderately favorable effects on some vascular measures. But when HT is started later, after years of vascular aging, cardiovascular risks can rise. Bottom line, the goal of HT is menopause symptom relief for better quality of life, not cardiovascular disease prevention. If your concern is heart disease, the most proven tools are still the unsexy ones. Tracking LDL and other risk markers, building heart-healthy habits, and using cholesterol-lowering medication when appropriate. And that was Cholesterol Isn't Just About Age or Diet, Hormones Matter Too, by Lisa Arbeiter. Up next, can a scent help you heal from loss? Natalie Wood's daughter, Natasha Gregson-Wagner, thinks so. Iconic film actress Natalie Wood's daughter, Natasha Gregson-Wagner, believes we can hold on to our loved ones through fragrance. I'm Willing to Try, by Kate Sandoval Box. Most of us remember movie star Natalie Wood as the doe-eyed ingenue who captured our hearts in such seminal films as Rebel Without a Cause, West Side Story, and Splendor in the Grass, and later for her devastating and mysterious death in the prime of her life. One of her daughters, Natasha Gregson-Wagner, was 11 at the time and has navigated the waves of grief ever since. "My mom and I were very close," she says. While the memories were all around her in the form of photos and film, she kept reaching for the last item she'd touched to hold on to her memory. When she died, her clothes and sheets still smelled like her. "That was deeply comforting," Gregson-Wagner explains. As traces of her mother's presence faded with the passage of time, she was inspired to recreate that scent, and now she's launching two others. "Soon after I interviewed her, I lost my own mother to Alzheimer's. The circumstances were very different, but when I reviewed our transcript, I could more fully understand the longing, the need for connection and comfort, and the urge to share her gratitude for her mom with others. If you've ever wondered why the smell of, say, cherry chapstick or a Jolly Rancher has the power to plumbline you to the way back of the station wagon of your 1980s childhood, there's science behind this phenomenon. Certain smells can activate the brain's emotion and memory centers, bypassing the main switchboard of the thalamus. Given my own recent loss, I wondered whether a fragrance could actually console me. I was eager to find out." The idea. When Gregson Wagner had her daughter, Clover, she was a working actor in Los Angeles. "I quit so I could be fully present with her," she recalls. "When she was about one, I was in a blissful state of mind, thinking about motherhood and my mom, and it was spring. We lived in Venice next to this tiny house surrounded by orange trees. The blossoms smelled incredible. The floral air was reminiscent of her mother's signature perfume, called Jungle Gardenia. It made me think, I want to create a fragrance as a thank you to my mom," she says. "With my dad's help, we found a fragrance house, and I spent more than 2 years creating my first scent called Natalie." It launched in 2016, and when the New York Times published a profile on her and the scent, it sold out immediately. "But I was completely unprepared, shipping overseas incorrectly and asking friends to help me pack boxes. But the experience shifted something in me. Speaking my truth felt incredible," Gregson-Wagner says. "I was able to turn sorrow into joy and beauty." "As if grief could be cured with a fragrance," you might very well be muttering. But what Gregson-Wagner says next is important. "Creating and wearing a scent that smells like her mom is," she says, "one bead on the necklace of healing. Sometimes smelling it makes me emotional, but sadness isn't something to fear. As I sit here, quick to end well-meaning conversations about my mom and staying as busy and distracted as I possibly can, there's a word for this stage. Oh, right, denial. I can see how creating the scent and then talking about it so publicly would be healing. When I was grappling with the anticipatory grief of losing my mom, I interviewed clinical psychologist Allison J. Applebaum, and something she said then keeps replaying now. When you feel that lump in your throat, get it out, label it, talk about it, write about it, express it somehow. Or why not smell it? In fact, it might be the quickest and most visceral choice of all. There's a direct link between the scent receptors in our nose and the part of our brain that houses memories and emotions. This is why a scent can spur a memory so well, transporting you more than when you hear a story or look at a photo. Scent is so powerful because it bypasses thought and goes straight to feeling, Gregson Wagner says. It bridges worlds. To experience this, you don't have to find a fragrance house to custom blend the scent of your loved one. First, their scent, or something similar to it, might still be for sale. Even a loose correlation can work. I once interviewed someone who said that most gourmand scents, anything with sweet notes of vanilla, chocolate, or caramel, would conjure her grandma, who often baked cookies with her. Another said that a blend of green and marine-y notes, grass, moss, salty ozone, brought her back to the friends she missed from her summer camp days. Here's what else I've done. I picked up the latest scent that Gregson Wagner created, called Liu Bliu, love in Russian, pronounced Liu Bliu, and designated it as the scent I wear when I want to think about my mom. Reaching for it is one way to draw my feelings a little closer to the surface. The scents. L'amour mère Liu Bliu. This honors my grandmother and has a note of church incense that elicits memories of her, Gregson Wagner says, of the scent, which conjures being bundled in warmth on a blustery day, with notes of honey, tuberose, sandalwood, amber, and musk. It's my most complex fragrance. It evolves on the skin. Women my age are gravitating to it, especially in winter. L'amour mère, sea love. Gregson Wagner named this after her daughter, Clover, and it smells of a true English rose. My dad is a botanist who taught me to love gardens, she says. It captures the heady mix of a fresh bouquet with rose de grace, geranium rose, gypsy orchid, purple iris, peony, and freesia. L'amour mère Nathalie Eau de Parfum. This is the first scent Gregson Wagner made to capture her mother's signature scent, gardenia. It also has orange flower, narcissus, jasmine, and hyacinth. This is the lightest and cleanest scent I've made, but all of them tie back to love, connection, joy, and remembrance. And that was Can a Scent Help You Heal from Loss? Natalie Wood's daughter, Natasha Gregson Wagner, thinks so, by Kate Sandoval Box. Up next, the key to healing your inner child? Start treating yourself like a baby. Nourishing meals, daily story time, a gentle bedtime routine. If we want to maintain our health and sanity as grown-ups, experts suggest we start treating ourselves more like infants. By Eleni N. Gage. This being 2026, you undoubtedly know all about reparenting your inner child. And maybe you've tried it, exploring the lifelong hurts you still carry and helping the wounded kid inside you heal. But what if the key to flourishing as an adult isn't just righting the wrongs of childhood, but going back to the very beginning and giving ourselves the same loving care we'd show to an infant? After all, we don't lavish attention and affection on babies because they've earned it. We adore them simply for existing. Furthermore, we brought them into a complicated, sometimes harsh world, and we want to equip them to thrive within it. Well, we could all use some of that TLC right about now. So we turned to pediatricians Ari Brown, MD, author of Baby 411, Your Baby from Birth to Age 1, and Harvey Karp, MD, author of The Happiest Baby on the Block, and co-inventor, with NASA, of the Snoo Smart Sleeper Bassinet, for more on how adults can benefit from some infantile self-care. Nutrition. Feed yourself carefully prepped food. Dr. Brown sees patients who spend hours prepping organic ingredients into food for kids, while shoveling junk into their own mouths, with one hand as they clean up the kitchen. I really try to encourage families to prepare meals in their home, says Dr. Brown. It's no small task, and I totally get that. But it's worth it, because when you make your own food, it's less likely to be ultra-processed or over-salted. Follow hunger cues and go slow and steady. We feed infants when they're hungry. The same rule should apply to ourselves. One way to help recognize when you're full and should stop eating is to slow the pace of your meal. Breastfed babies have to work at it to get the milk out, says Dr. Brown. and parents who bottle feed are encouraged to hold the bottle as horizontally as possible, so the milk comes out a little slower. That slows the pace of the feeding down, so babies will develop satiety cues, she says, pointing out. It takes all of us like 20 minutes to realize, oh, I'm full. For a grown-up, that translates to eating slowly and mindfully, rather than scarfing down food before your next task. Sleep. With parents, Dr. Brown talks about setting up a consistent sleep routine for babies. For adults, she says, the term is sleep hygiene. But the idea is the same. A series of comforting actions that tell your brain it's time to stop ruminating and your body it's time to start resting. Babies develop sleep associations, and we want them to be positive ones. So you feed them, you read them a book, you do cuddle time, and that helps their brain wind down to sleep. For adults, that looks like putting screens away 30 minutes before bed and reading a story instead of watching TV. We're not having your little one watch Instagram before they go to bed. The same should apply to you, says Dr. Brown. Curl up under a heavy blanket. Three other S words that help babies rest are side or stomach, referring to sleeping positions that calm infants, and swaddling, wrapping a wriggly baby up tightly to replicate the feeling of being in the womb. A lot of adults don't like to sleep on the stomach, but being on the side in a kind of fetal position is soothing for a lot of people, says Dr. Karp. As for the swaddling, social media is full of ads for adult sleep sacks, but if that seems a bit extreme, consider a weighted blanket. Being wrapped up and being warm are helpful if you want to be calmed, but weight is helpful as well, says Dr. Karp. With adults who have psychiatric issues, we use straitjackets, in part to protect them and protect everyone else, but in part because it reduces their anxiety. Enjoy story time. We prioritize reading to our kids, says Dr. Brown. Unfortunately, for adults, it can be a lost art. But it shouldn't be. Reading fiction has been shown to activate the default mode network of the brain, the part that lights up during meditation, which means story time can calm your anxiety and boost your imagination, creativity, and memory, all at the same time. Contact. If you know how when you see a baby, you just want to pick it up, hold it, and squish its adorable thigh? How nice would the world be if you could tell someone, or if you could tell that someone couldn't wait to give you a warm squeeze? Here are ways to replicate that. Get a massage. We do an awful lot of infant massage, says Dr. Brown, as the practice has been shown to reduce stress, boost the immune system, and aid in digestion. What happened to spouse massage? Treat yourself to an appointment every so often, or swap massages with your significant other. Cuddle up. One that's really, really important for babies, and adults as well, is contact with a person, says Dr. Karp. Human contact is a nutrient for us. Isolation leads to distress. So, become a hugger. The contact that is the most satisfying from the centering or calming point of view is that 20-second hug where you relax in it, he advises. Touch, skin to skin if you have that opportunity, has a very deep connection to centering. And best of all, hugs are a two-way street. You're not just treating yourself like a baby, but nourishing your loved one's inner infant as well. And that was The Key to Healing Your Inner Child, Start Treating Yourself Like a Baby by Eleni N. Gage. Up next, Oprah on Choosing Kindness Over Darkness. It's easy to get pulled into the swirling daily chaos. Now more than ever, staying true to your values is crucial, by Oprah Winfrey. Happy Sunday, Insiders. Thanks to all of you for your support of Enough. It's great hearing from those of you who've been on your own weight loss journeys, with and without GLP-1s. Wink, wink, Sparkle King. Of course, I love the positivity and safety that emanates from this O Daily space. But as we know, not everyone in the world wishes us well. I ran across a bit of wisdom from motivational speaker and author Esther Hicks this week that I was happy to be reminded of. This dropped into my email. Because others cannot vibrate in your experience, they cannot affect the outcome of your experience. They can hold their opinions, but unless their opinions affect your opinions, their opinions matter not at all. 1 million people could be pushing against you, and it would not negatively affect you unless you push back. They are affecting what happens in their experience. They are affecting their point of attraction, but it does not affect you, unless you push against them. I share this with you because we all need to be reminded sometimes of what Glinda the Good Witch told the Wicked Witch of the West. Be gone. You have no power here. When you stay in your own territory of good feelings, graciousness, kindness, and lightness, darkness has a hard time penetrating. Negativity has the power we give it. Abraham Lincoln put it best. I do the best I know how, the very best I can, and I mean to keep on doing it to the end. If the end brings me out all right, what is said against me will not amount to anything. If the end brings me out all wrong, 10 angels swearing I was right would make no difference. It's easy to get pulled into the swirling daily chaos. Now more than ever, staying true to your values is crucial. So let's keep choosing what feels good. Let's keep moving in the direction of light, of health, of self-respect, however that looks for each of us. Because the real power is not in what others say, but in what we decide to believe about ourselves. We are not here to push against the world. We are here to expand in spite of it. And in the end, the only thing that matters is that we stayed kind, stayed curious, and stayed committed to becoming the strongest and most loving versions of ourselves. That's enough. And that was Oprah on Choosing Kindness Over Darkness by Oprah Winfrey. We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Daily. Please join us next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kathy Bostrom, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Oprah Daily is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.